And good morning to everyone. Our first case this morning is State Ex Rel Council for Discipline versus Shvala. Justice Castle is recused from this matter. Mr. Domina, good morning to you.
Thank you, Governor. Council for Discipline and I both stood because we had a question about how you might want us to proceed.
So, which would you prefer?
I think we prefer this order today. We recognize the burden of proof. We had that discussion. We were prepared to switch tables, but we'll proceed this way with your permission.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Dave Domina. I'm here on behalf of Janet Crotter Kuala, the respondent in this disciplinary proceeding. It is our position that the case of counsel for discipline against this lawyer fails on the admissions of the grievance made during the hearing. These are the essential admissions made that defeat, first, the existence of an attorney-client relationship, which is essential to every rule she's charged with violating except the misconduct rule, and second, negate misconduct. First, Mr. Kuala bought the farm in question. There is a dispute about how the initial conversation went at presentation time, but the complaining parties admit the husband bought the farm. Secondly, the transaction was fair. There is no contention to the contrary, and there are direct admissions by both brothers that the price, the terms, the option price, the time period, the method of exercise were all fair.
What effect does it have on your argument that the land was transferred to the LLC and that your client had an interest in the LLC?
Third, it's admitted by the couch, Your Honor, that the land was transferred to an LLC, that Gary made that decision. The husband of the respondent made that decision.
Does the decision maker matter there?
I think it does. And it matters for this reason. Gary was able to transfer 100% of the ownership. He chose to transfer 99% and to give his wife 1% for this reason. If he had been a single owner limited liability company at that time under the tax law, and he had died, which he did not expect to do, his death was sudden and unexpected, the entity would have dissolved, and there would have been a taxable event and no chance for continuity. The 1% ownership was designed to have an effect only in the event of his death, which was not anticipated, which gave no control, and which changed no terms of any kind in dealings with the complaining parties.
Why should the motivation of the 1% ownership matter to us in this case?
Well, it matters only, I think, in response to the question, does the transfer to the LLC matter? And my response to that overall question is that the transfer to the LLC is completely inconsequential. It makes no difference. It didn't change the lease, the terms, the times, the option, or anything else. And the original transaction permitted a transfer to occur in the language at the end of the lease agreement. So there was no need for consent to transfer the lease to a wholly controlled entity with no change in terms. So that's also conceded. The fact that the transaction went without incident for years and there was an 851-day period of time during which to exercise this option is conceded and uncontested. Most importantly, there is no contest about the fact that Exhibit 72, page 4, is in this record. Even though the referee didn't mention it, counsel for discipline didn't mention it, it's in this record three times. That's a letter written by the respondent to the complaining parties 165 days into the 851-day option period saying, remember, I'm not your lawyer in dealings with my husband. I'm not your lawyer in dealings with this option. The option period was open. They called her office and asked her for a copy of the option, the complaining parties. She sent it to them with that letter. There's a claim made here that this respondent tried to lull the grievance past the exercise deadline, which was a specific date and hour, March 1 at 5 p.m., for her financial advantage. That letter 100% negates that claim. So this lawyer was never counsel for these brothers in this transaction. Not only is that included in the original document, Exhibit 29, it's admitted by these brothers in their testimony at the proceedings conducted before this court's referee. In addition to that, the transaction was fundamentally and undeniably and admittedly fair, and there was no lulling. So that means without an attorney-client relationship, counsel for discipline has no case on any of the rule violations except the one that requires that all of us as lawyers tell the truth to everybody all of the time, regardless of our relationship with the person with whom we are dealing. And on that point, the best that I can see that counsel for discipline can muster is that there was a telephone call in December of 2012 by a bank employee for the Tri-County Bank at Stewart, Nebraska, made by a woman named Ms. Cadwallader, who testified very clearly about these points. She was asked to make a telephone call to ask about a possible real estate closing for a customer of the bank, or two brothers, named Kaup. She knew the name of the customer. She knew the transaction was land. She knew who she was to call. She didn't know who the seller was. She didn't know what the land was. She knew the Kaups were involved, but she wasn't 100% sure they were the buyer. She didn't know the price. She didn't know the terms. She didn't know the dates. She was calling to ask Ms. Crotter-Quala, basically, are you going to handle a deal involving the Kaups? The record discloses that these brothers own thousands of acres of land, dozens of farms, which they purchased during this period of time while this lease was ongoing.
Before that conversation, had the Kaups contacted your client about the option, exercising the option?
One of the Kaups did contact my client. So the answer to the first half of your question is yes to before that. As to the second half, was it about the exercise of the option, Your Honor? At best, there is a dispute on a very murky recollection of a phone call estimated at about 1 minute.
And how did the referee decide that discrepancy?
The referee decided that he believed that the testimony given by Kurt Kaup was that Mr. Kaup communicated to Ms. Crotter-Quala that he wanted to exercise the option. Of course, we have what he said at the hearing verbatim in the record. What we don't have are his facial expressions when he said it. So the question is, do we have a contest in the credibility of those two witnesses to which deference must be paid? And I contend the answer to that is no. If you look at the testimony of the respondent, she doesn't dispute what Mr. Kaup said. He said, as best I remember. She said, as best I remember, the answer was, we're not interested in any land until next year. And she thought he was talking about property being offered for sale in an auction the next day or later in the week.
How did that conversation occur about the other property?
Was that
in context of the option being exercised and a 1031 exchange and consideration of buying additional property to replace that?
Well, the answers to that are very clearly no, because there was no 1031 issue here. There was no land to 1031, so it couldn't have been that. It came up in a telephone call in which there was a discussion about land and about an auction. That's admitted by both sides. From that point on, that conversation is murky, and the burden of proof here is clear and convincing evidence. And even if one were to conclude that Ms. Crotter-Quala said to him in that, not until next year, we're not interested until next year, he knew that he had to exercise the option and acknowledge that, and he was talking to another lawyer about this subject. There's no question that these brothers had contacted Tom Ferringer, a lawyer in Columbus, about this option and planned to meet with him about it again. They had separate legal advice.
When did that call occur?
Well, Your Honor, we think that there were multiple communications. The dates aren't very specific, but we know that one was before the November call that Justice Funk asked about, and that there was a meeting scheduled to occur with Ferringer in February that the parties testified didn't happen because of a snowstorm. There's no evidence that the telephone lines were down because of the snowstorm.
And the reason I was asking, if you had a 1031 on the table, you have a window.
You would have.
And saying next year.
Yeah. Now, in this case, there's no tax issue that motivated.
You'd want to back up and see when the start day was.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. There's no tax issue that issued to motivate a 1031 here.
Okay.
There just isn't a 1031 issue in the case.
So what was the purpose of buying the other property or considering the other property?
There wasn't any. There was no connection of any kind between the two. No tax collection, no planning collection, no financial connection, none. Zero. Remember that if the option had been exercised, the purchase price was the original basis. So there's no 1031 issue. Once in a while before this court, counsel for discipline has to lose for these proceedings to work. This is such a case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Frobisher. Good morning to you.
Morning, Chief Justice, members of the court. My name is Kent Frobisher, Assistant Counsel for Discipline. I'm here this morning on behalf of Office of Counsel for Discipline. This is a disciplinary matter involving Janet Crawford Cavala. She engaged in conduct of involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, and misrepresentation for which she should be disbarred. She defrauded her clients of over $1.3 million. She refuses to take responsibility for her misconduct. Throughout the prosecution of this case and at the hearing before the referee, Ms. Cavala was dishonest. The referee, who heard and saw the witnesses testify, found Ms. Cavala to be deceitful. The referee stated that her lack of credibility in these proceedings was egregious. Now, when reviewing this case, I would ask this court to look at three specific exhibits. Exhibit number 10. This is a photograph in a magazine article regarding Wayne and Kirk Kaup. These are real human beings. These are real men with families who were farmers who trusted their lawyer. They're not present this morning. Remember that this case affected real individuals. The second exhibit is exhibit number 3. These are photographs of the farm. The section of land that the Kaup brothers wanted to buy is represented there. And then the hog operation they built on that section of land is represented. These men invested their lives into this farm and this agribusiness because they expected to own the land at the end of the 10-year option. And the third exhibit that I would hope you would focus on, and in fact perhaps read very first off, is a deposition of Gary Cavala, Janet Crawford Cavala's husband. That deposition was taken in May of 2013 after the brothers, Wayne and Kurt, sued Janet and Gary and their LLC on this option agreement. Mr. Cavala passed away just a little more than a month after his deposition, but his deposition shows clearly his understanding of the case, his understanding of the relationship with the brothers, and his lack of participation in the matter, his lack of understanding of the terms of the agreement. This was Janet Crawford Cavala's purchase. It was her deal. She directed everything, whose name it should be placed in, what the terms of the lease and the option would be, how it would be paid. She manipulated the agreement after the fact. She failed to disclose information to her clients. She failed to advise her clients. Yes, sir.
Mr. Domina called our attention to a particular letter sent apparently to the Kaup brothers after the option period began or
yes.
Near the option period.
Right. And that's
what is your take on that letter?
Well, that's addressed clearly in my brief and in the referee's report. Remember, the referee heard 3 days of testimony, 50-page brief and 25-page reply brief of Mr. Domina after the hearing. And he ended up writing a 99-page report. He thoroughly analyzed this. But the question that you raised, Your Honor, is that that letter, Kirk Kopp asks Ms. Qualla, can I have a copy of our lease and option agreement? I believe it was both. Maybe it was just the option agreement. And copies of the option agreement for my mom and my Aunt Rita, because Ms. Qualla represented everybody in this transaction in 2003. She delayed. Took her over 2 months to respond to her client. He had to make a second call. She couldn't find the option agreements for Rita or Diane Cow, mother. But she did find her option agreement. She emailed it to Kurt. The next day, she wrote a letter to Kurt and saying, I found your option. Can't find your mom's and your aunt's. But remember, I'm representing my husband on this matter. And I can't represent you. Fine. There was no issue at that time. The option was open. The brothers had come to her earlier and said, before the option opened in 2010, we'd like to close this deal now. We'd like to buy one quarter now, and we'll buy the other quarter later. Squala said, I'm not interested in doing the deal early, closing the deal early, and I'm not interested in separating it. Brother said, fine. We're paying below market rent. The value of the land is going up, and we can rent this thing for another 2 more years. Fine with us. Her comment to them was, I want to find some land to replace this land with. She liked her investment.
Counsel, I'm going to take you back to the letter for
a
second. Is it your position that something more needed to be said in the letter that was sent during the period that the option was open? If that letter was inadequate, how was it inadequate?
Well, it was inadequate because she did not tell them to get other counsel. She did not tell them to, and I don't have the letter in front of me, so I'm trying to recall the content of this particular one. The significance is that a couple of things. She didn't say that, you know, my husband can't honor the option because he doesn't own the land anymore. Remember, the option is with Gary Cavalla, not TTC Enterprises, the corporation that Jan created and transferred the land to. He can't transfer all of the land to you under the option because we gave you 5 acres earlier so you could build your hog operation. She didn't tell him, oh, and we moved that the address in the option agreement, that's not good anymore. Here's where we live if you're going to give notice. She didn't do that. There were many things that she should have done. But the important time frame is not that letter. The important time frame is November of 2012, when Kurt specifically called her and said, we want to exercise the option. We want to close on the deal this year in 2012. The option was fully open. In one of their earlier meetings, Janet said, I want to find other land to buy. When I get the money from you folks, I want to put it in other land. This is not a 1031 exchange case. It never was. She never said that to the brothers. That's not the point. There may be good tax reasons for 1031 exchanges, but there's also other good reasons to say, if I'm going to sell one piece of ground that I've been making money on with interest, I'd like to take that money instead of putting it in the bank, buy some more ground. That's what she told the brothers. It didn't have anything to do with the 1031 exchange. And so that's not the issue. And so when, in November, Kurt said, we want to exercise, she didn't tell him, your oral exercise is inadequate. You have to follow the contract.
Was she obligated to tell him that in light of the fact the earlier letter she informed them she wasn't acting as their lawyer?
Because she had continued to act as their lawyer. That's the point. For 10 years, while this agreement was in place, she continued to act as their lawyer and advise them on all things. And I've identified throughout my brief and in the referee report the times that Ms. Qualla continued to interact with them regarding the lease and the option. She was continuing to represent them. In November, she should have said, Kurt, I hear what you're saying, you want to excise, you need to go talk to another lawyer. I can't represent you on this. She didn't. He said, we want to excise, and her response was, I can't get to it until the end of December. That's the false statement. That's the misleading. That's the beginning of the point where she lulled her clients into allowing the option time to elapse.
Did she represent or the LLC or whatever form we are at this point?
Oh, she represents everyone.
Okay.
Just about, well, so yes, the she's representing the LLC, she's representing her husband, she's representing herself. So the first call, telephone conversation is November 2012. The second telephone conversation is in December. I believe it's December 12th. And that's where Kurt says, Jan, you had told us you wanted to find some replacement land. When we close on this deal, you want to take the money and buy some replacement lands. There's some land for sale called the Waldo Quarters. That's how everybody referred to it. We're not interested in it, as Kurt and Wayne testified at the hearing. It's too far away from our operation. We were never interested in the Waldo Quarters. But Jan, that might be something you'd be interested in when you get the money to change. I'm out of time. I would simply urge the court to remember that the referee heard and saw the witnesses. This is a de novo review, but deference should be given to the fact that this very skilled referee, retired district court judge, determined that Ms. Koala was dishonest, that she should be disbarred. Thank you.
Counsel, before you sit down,
yes, sir.
What import does the language in the lease and option agreement have, the paragraph 21?
That paragraph 21 is just about worthless because all it references is the lease. It says the parties acknowledge that the law firm and Ms. Koala specifically, we're not representing either of them. She wasn't representing her husband. But it doesn't reference the agreement that they reached in January. That's when this whole thing started, not April, when the lease was signed. And it doesn't refer to the option. It, for what it is worth, it refers to the lease, end of issue. So that's not any kind of protection. The protection that Ms. Koala could have given to her clients was the letter she wrote to them. I believe it was March 12th of 2013, after she had hired Mr. Domino to represent herself and her husband, saying, oh, I've got conflicts, I shouldn't represent you anymore. That's the letter she should have sent to them in November, December, January, February, March, or January, February. We wouldn't be here today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next